Pals O' Mine. I'm Julie Parker, and this is Conversation Accessories. One of my goals with this podcast is to highlight artistry, whether it be with the written or spoken word, a paintbrush, fashion, music, etc. So naturally, I had to interview like-minded Christina Marie of Capital Indie Collective, Inc., and the creative force behind Indie Blush magazine, who mentors aspiring artists in all media in Northern California.
So you're in the midst of preparing for Burning Man?
Yeah, my living room has really exploded with all the different fabrics and things, but that is the goal this year, is to go to Burning Man.
And I see pink flamingo wings?
Yeah, those are pink flamingo wings. Basically, I got a Schwinn bike, and I'm converting it to a Schwing, and putting big flamingo head in the front, and then flamingo wings are covering the wheel. It's twofold. One, decor. Two, it's a skirt guard, so I don't catch my costumes in the wheels when I'm running across the desert.
That would suck.
That would suck, yeah.
You don't want to be going. Before?
I have not. I haven't seen a few.
Huh?
Yeah, I've seen a few accidents, like epic fails. People are mean. They post pictures in the internet.
How many plans do you have under your belt?
This will be my first.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're arriving in style.
I am. I'm sure my burner mentors and friends think I'm like just chomping at the bit, like a skippy, you know? Yay, Burning Man, yeah. But yeah, I'm a type A personality, so I don't do anything small. I go big, or I go home.
Yeah, what's the point?
Right, yeah.
You don't put just one toe in the water. Let's just stay on the beach.
Yeah, cannonball. Yeah, so that's where the big pink wings and fur basket and vinyl and more fur.
And the bike is a purple, so it's a nice complementary color.
Yeah, I wanted to go pink, but apparently bikes sell out fast right before Burning Man in our region, so I didn't have much stock to choose from with the amenities I wanted, so we just got the basic and lavender, and I really like lavender. We'll see how it goes.
Now you're going to have an art project there, right, Dysphoria?
Yes, this year I'm not. Dysphoria, we started summer before this. And one of the participants, well, not just one, many of the participants were burners. And they were just like, wow, Christina, this is something we should take to the burn. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. So I started applying for grants and stuff.
So explain what Dysphoria is.
Dysphoria is a photo project that we started summer before this. And there were some burner participants and they wanted to take it to Burning Man. And I considered it and immediately began writing for grants. I was denied several times. And the reason why is because, well, for the Burning Man grant specifically, they have a bias against photo projects. They didn't realize, though, I think they don't really quite get just how perfect this is for Burning Man. And that's my failing at really painting a direct picture. But Dysphoria is a nude body study project that we just started out of the result of a really mean troll on my friend's Facebook feed.
You mean there are nice trolls?
No, I don't think so. I think there are less aggressive trolls, though.
Okay, less aggressive. Okay, that sounds better.
Craig Fouts, the principal photographer for the project, put a portrait of himself shot by Darren Paquette, his partner at Chiaroscuro. And it's a nude portrait, very tasteful, very high art, avant-garde, using the chiaroscuro lighting style, and he's a very thin ectomorph. You know, he's just very slight. And the trolls just came out and they're like, oh, you're anorexic, you're disgusting, you know, just like really being mean. And I came on the thread and I said, you know, guys, come on, man, give him a break. He's just trying to express himself and do something that, you know, his models do for him regularly because he shoots a lot of nude, like tattoo models and stuff. And they were like, well, you're coming to his defense because you're just a skinny bitch, you know? And I'm just like, oh, really? That's how we're going to play this game. Okay. So I called up Darren and Craig and I said, you know what? I'm next. I've never done a nude photo in my life. With all my years of being an actress and a model, I've never done nude. And I'm doing it all the way. Let's do it. Because these people need to be educated that you're an ectomorph, I'm an ectomorph. And get the word out there that you are your body type. You know, there's no... I could be an obese ectomorph. I could be an anorexic endomorph. But it doesn't change that, you know, you're an endomorph, an ectomorph, or a mesomorph. And I think once people start learning that each body is beautiful...
I wonder how many people are actually going to learn that.
I think we've already begun teaching quite a bit about that.
There's also that, like, high school mentality. or the kids that want to belong. So they just blindly follow mm-hmm. whatever the popular kids are saying.
Right.
Even if they don't believe it themselves.
Right.
That's probably been around since time began.
Sure.
And I'm absolutely for what you're doing, but I also see the frustration of it. It's like two steps up, one step back.
Yeah.
Then you go forward, and then you come back, and you finally have models now that are above average size.
Yeah.
That are finally making a splash, so to speak.
Are you talking about in general media? Dysphoria is not really speaking out against the advertising industry. We understand most, about half of us are media professionals that began as participants for Dysphoria. We understand that advertising professionals need to convince you that you have a problem in order to sell you a product, right? And that's capitalism and very American. We're trying to set out and educate people more like digital media literacy. We're trying to reach out to the kids and say, and adults, and say, okay, you know what? There's this, you know, 100-pound, unbelievably perfectly beautiful, in, you know, someone's opinion, model on the cover of this magazine. You don't have to be that person. And understand that person has been Photoshopped to death. And you are beautiful in your own way. Your body is doing what it's supposed to do. You are being you. And once you can accept that, you can accept others and stop hating on each other or being jealous of each other or condemning each other. All my life, I've had issues with people condemning me or complimenting me based on my weight. And I've been as small as 113 pounds all the way up to 200 pounds. And it was really frustrating for me to hear, like, at 200 pounds, like, okay, you can stop eating now. You know, but at 113 pounds, when I was a dancer and a gymnast, completely fit, eating like a horse, oh, you're anorexic. Oh my God, eat a sandwich. You know, and when I was on the way up to 200, people were just like, oh, you're so radiant. You're so beautiful. Oh, I love your curves. You know, oh, you should eat like this more often. And it's like, I'm pregnant. You know, come on, guys. You know, so it's, I think particularly in the United States, women are judged by their body size and shape, you know, and we are hypersexualized and, you know, it's all about the breasts, you know, and the nipple. Oh my God, the nipple. That's like a whole nother tangent thing we could talk about.
Well, that's one of the things I love about Amanda Palmer, when she was called out at some event and she had a transparent dress on
mm-hmm.
and she's, you know what? I'm going to go a step further. So the media and these trolls and all these people can't attack me anymore. So right on stage during a performance, she just dropped all of her clothes. She's standing at the keyboard, stark naked.
Oh my God. Like,
okay, what can you, nothing, you can't do anything with this?
Yeah.
I'm completely, voluntarily, head to toe. The entire world can see me now.
Yeah.
And they did. They had it back off. There was nothing for them to work with.
Yeah. How you like
me now? She took control. Yeah. She took control of her life and her situation, at least as far as that. There'll always still be people that I have to mock and... Right. But she shut up quite a few of them, and she has accrued quite a following because of it. And I do like that every once in a while you will see websites or Facebook pages, organizations that will showcase models mm-hmm. before and after Photoshop. So hopefully
yeah.
young girls can see what they really look like.
Yeah.
You know, not to beat themselves up.
Well, and that's the digital media education portion of this. We've been, with our Facebook page, the Dysphoria Project is our Facebook page. We share and celebrate other campaigns that are body project campaigns. Like, I mean, the Dove campaign is great. Inside Out is great. There's just a bunch of stuff we share and say, you know, look, here's the before, here's the after. The after is a completely artistic, beautiful image. And, you know, that can be celebrated. The before, you know what? She's a perfectly fine human being the way she is. And that can be celebrated.
To me, it's like makeup and clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Or dyeing your hair.
Mm-hmm.
You're altering your image.
Yeah.
Whether it's weight or color sense.
Right.
But it's sometimes when you're in control of it and you want people to think that maybe you're Alice in Wonderland because your hair is now pink and purple.
Right.
Or you want them to think that you live on the dark side because you're jet black.
I'm so emo.
Like, okay, you think that's what I am? I'm just going to go with it then.
Yeah.
I'm just going to like throw it at you until you complain about that and then I'll go this direction.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where some of that frustration comes from. Like, I mean, I worked in the emergency room for 10 years earlier in my life, and I remember working with some very codependent, mean nurses who hated me because I was thin and young and vivacious, and they were just like, they just couldn't wait for me to be so beaten down from working in the ER for 40 years that, you know, I was, you know, like them. And I felt sorry for them. I wasn't angry back or, you know, I didn't like lash out in response. I just felt sorry because, you know, you choose your environment. You choose who you are. You're the one that gets to say. And, you know, if you have a few extra pounds that you want to get rid of, fine. If you don't, if you're happy with your body, great. But don't look at me and envy me, because I say life is fair. You know, you're looking across the table at somebody and you're jealous of them, or you hate them because of their appearance, or you think they should somehow be more like you. You might want to explore what's going on in their life, because like I can tell you, being me is not easy. Being thin and in front of the camera a lot is not easy. And people look at me sometimes and they just get real, I mean, I don't know if jealous is the word, but judgmental maybe. And like, you know, oh, look at her. Oh, she must be so rich and she must have it so easy. And, you know, it's like, no, I'm a starving artist, man. You know, I might have a slick image out there, but I am an artist too. And I have real trials and tribulations. You know, I broke my back in two places. You want to have that in your history? You want to be me? Okay. You go through the severe pain I'm in every winter because I was a gymnast for 15 years. Try not being able to lift your arms over your head to get something simple because you have arthritis already. You know? Sure, you can hate on me, but I have imperfections too.
And your life will still suck.
Yeah, if you decide, your life will still suck. So, and I was just telling my girlfriend the other day, it's difficult to choose happiness.
I tell kids in my family this. I said, when another kid is mean to you, it's because something in their life is making them sad or unhappy. Mm-hmm. And so they have to say something to you to make you feel sad and happy so they feel better for 30 seconds.
Right.
So no, it has nothing to do with you. It's wherever they are. And sometimes you have to tell adults that too. Like yeah. Trolls. The trolls are doing that for a reason. And some of them will say, well, it's just because I can. It's like, no, it's because there's something you can't do in your life. And yeah. So you're being selective. And it, but it's hard sometimes if they're really messing with something you're trying to build.
Well, I think to me, I just remember it's a false power. They think that they're all powerful and mighty when they can just do that to you. But it's really such a fleeting, temporary power, because the minute you stop engaging them, they're done. And the true empowerment is choosing happiness. No matter what your life is like, choose to be happy. Find something good that's going on. I mean, right now, this last month has been a roller coaster ride for me. And I mean, I had two choices. I could be like really bummed out and upset about my life, or I could look at it and go, well, you know what? There's this that's positive. There's that that's positive. And hold on to that as hard as I can and keep trying to attract more positive things like that. I mean, that's kind of how I get through.
I try to be pragmatic sometimes when something just drops up in a big opening in the universe.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So that's not going to happen. Okay, I'll turn this direction. What am I supposed to do now instead?
Yeah.
You know, just pragmatism that helps sometimes. Like, well, okay.
Right.
Hands up in the air.
Yeah. Well, this exploded in my face. What should I do now? What does this tell me? What does this teach me?
I don't even do what does it teach me. For me, it's just like, well, okay, that's just no longer on the table.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by being pragmatic. It's,
okay.
It's like a matter of fact, well, okay, I was going to do this and now I can't. So yeah. I'm pissed, mm-hmm. You know, or I'm bummed.
Yeah.
But stepping back, like, well, but it's gone.
Yeah.
So just kind of asking the universe in generally, so, okay, so what do I do now?
Yeah.
What do I do now? Just introduce me to the person or the information, you know, the visuals, whatever it may be, and I will pursue it that way.
Yeah.
And I've learned that that's what worked for me, is because when you start focusing on what should have been, that you were hoping to have been. I think that our body types and how we look at each other, my mom had issues with her body type because of the way she was raised and her mother.
Yeah.
And I still remember her very well telling me, oh, your legs are really flabby, you know, as you're running around the
baseball.
Oh, God. Yeah, so I went right back in the house and never come out again.
Oh, no. Yeah. See, we're trying to avoid that.
So, you know, your family, you know, a lot of it comes from that. So, yeah. Not only working on your body issues with your friends and your classmates,
yeah.
But you have all that stuff sometimes from your family that were put in there.
Totally ingrained.
And how do you neutralize that?
It's you tough. Stop it. And that's why we're doing the project the way we're doing it. I mean, They're all nude. You show as much as little or as little as you want. They're all lit in the chiaroscuro style from the first round. We brought in another photographer, Kimberly Lucero of Penumbra Photography, to do the second round. We've shot like 50 or 60 participants at this point. We don't call them models. They're all participants. Each participant is expected to share their story and why they chose to do the project. We do not ask anybody to participate. They all approach us. And we all want to know what we want to know why they came to us, and we let them know, like, this is the core of the project. Here's what we're doing. Do you still want to do it? And we've had a couple of people duck out, you know, like, oh, I thought I'd get, you know, a chance to have like a free nude of myself. And, you know, it's like, well, it doesn't work that way.
Le boudoir photography.
Right. Exactly. That's not what it's about. We're a gallery only project. It's not on the internet. We do have some promos that we're using that are not the full image releases, of course, but you don't get an image at your house of yourself. You know, I mean, these images are 4 feet by 8 feet.
They're not wallet size.
No. They are literally larger than life, because we want people, when they're in the gallery, to have this overwhelming experience. And so far we've had 2 gallery showings and the response has been just that, very overwhelming. Some people look at them and they're crying. Some people are laughing. Some people are just sharing their story, you know, with people that come. It's very cathartic for them. I know for me, going into it, I was like in warrior princess mode. I was like, I'm going to defend my friend Craig, and yeah, it's on, you know. And then I got in front of the camera, and the day I was like all shaky and feeling weird, and I was like, what? You know, I've been a model for eons and actress, just going to go in front of the camera, no big deal. And it's like, well, yeah, because you've never
to be someone else. This is not going to be you.
Yeah, exactly. This is me. This is me naked. And I talked to Craig about, like, I don't know if I want to do full frontal. Like, I really, maybe I'll just be like really kind of demure about it. And he's like, that's not you. He's like, that's not the warrior that I know. And I'm just like, well, and it's like, we did like a sitting where, you know, I took a lot of like kind of dancey poses and some stuff. We had some art ideas that just didn't really work. And then he's like, let's just mess around. And so we did, and I was kind of goofing off when he just this one pose hit, and it is full on, full frontal. And I was like, okay, we're not going to use that one, right? You know, and he's just like, yeah, sure, you know. And then a couple months later, he got around to editing my photo, getting it into the right format and stuff. I mean, we're doing things like taking away zits, but we're not liquefying anybody at all. And liquefaction is where you make somebody skinnier or heavier, like bigger boobs, fuller lips. We're not doing any of that. But like, let's say there's a rash that day, you know, we'll take away the rash. Or if there's like a horrific tan line, you know, we'll blend the tan line, you know, but we're really not doing much. And he goes, yeah, I have your proof for you. And I was like, oh yeah, great. Which one do you choose? He's like, oh, you'll see. And he sends it across to me and I'm like, oh, he did the full frontal. And so at first it was just all that bullshit, basically, that you learn as a woman in the United States, you know, covered up, hide it, put it away. You know, I was raised Catholic too. So it was just like, ah, I'm naked, you know. But then after that initial, like, 2 seconds reaction, I went, oh God, yeah, this is the one. That's the right one. He chose the best pose. And I was cool with that. And then I had left for the first exhibition, and I didn't know, we sent a bunch of stuff off to the printer and we didn't know which ones would be printed, which ones, you know, they had time for, money. It's extremely expensive to print these.
How many images were you limited to? Space-wise, I mean, not financial, but...
Well, both financially and space-wise, the first exhibition, I think we only had 8 full-size. And then we were able to print some small, just to have the images there. So we ended up with 16 images the first run. The second run, we ended up with 32, I want to say, all full size. So that was a huge increase. And the first exhibition was at Cap City offices and gallery. And then the second one was like a one-day only pop-up at the Warehouse Artist Lofts project in Sacramento. It's a live workspace created for the artistic class.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah.
Fabulous idea.
It's amazing. The people that built that and put it together are dear friends of mine. And I was just like, I want to show at Wall. And so Ali Yousefi was like, yeah, we want you to show at Wall. So we went there and did a one-day kind of educational, this is what an endomorph, ectomorph, mesomorph is. Here's the gallery. Here's the mission. And please sponsor prints. So we have been getting print sponsorships in, which is great because it's $200 to print each print. And our print partner is really gracious about like throwing in extra sheets when they can and, you know, giving us extra man hours when they can. And they're just really awesome about jumping in for us. But it's still just insanely expensive. And taking the whole exhibition to Burning Man, it's ludicrous.
That was going to be my next question. How would you present these?
I'll tell you what our original grant proposal was.
Okay.
Because this is the wild ride, okay? This is the crazy part. Like, I'm like, Burning Man! It's like this vortex of hippies in the desert and art, and they're going to love me! And I'm reading the grant guidelines, and we need 50 grand. And that was our first budget, was 50 grand. And I'm just like, okay, there's a bias. They weight a bias against photo projects because they're not participation projects or participatory art. Yeah. And so I said, well, okay, I can see how that applies to us, but it's not really applying to us because once they hear my art camp, they're going to be so impressed. And then they were like, yeah, not really, but
not so much.
Actually, they were really nice about it. They wrote us a really great letter back saying the grant proposal was awesome. It was really well written, but the weight against photo projects is what knocked us out. But what it was proposed to be was, you know how there's 52 weeks in a year? We were going to bring 51 images that were set in like a maze that you would walk through. And then once you got to the center of this maze, there'd be a 50-second placard that's blank that you could then take off of your clothes and have a picture done right then and there if you wanted to. Or not, if you didn't want to. It's whatever you choose. And then this maze was going to be set under a circus tent with a 30-foot-tall king pole. And the tent was being made out of all these different parachutes kind of like lashed together. And then there's like a center ring with fire blowers, twirlers, acrobats, tightrope, all this stuff. It was basically the circus of dysphoria, kind of as a metaphor. And then we found out that this year's theme was Carnival of Mirrors. And we're like, oh my God, even better, you know? And so we added the funhouse mirrors. One of my high school buddies owned a carnival and a circus.
Oh, fun.
And so I called him up and I'm like, hey, you wouldn't happen to have any funhouse mirrors, would you? And he's like, I know a guy who knows a guy who still has these things, you know? And so to our proposal, we added like those wavy gravy mirrors and stuff. And I was talking about the shift and how you see yourself and how distorted our society has made ourselves. And you're just going to live that metaphor on your journey to the center of, you know, basically you, which Burning Man's all about finding you and expressing you. And I'm just like, oh, it's just so perfect, you know, and not so much. They were just like, yeah, it's a great proposal, but not this year. And have you ever been to a Burning Man? And it's like, well, no, but it's going to be awesome. And they're just like, yeah, come as a participant. So
I'm sure you'll get lots of ideas.
Oh, definitely. But that's what evolved into me going to Burning Man this year. And I'm actually going to film an acrobatic troupe, obviously experience it for myself, you know, and participate to the hilt. I mean, obviously, you see my bike and Flamingo. My fur.
Flamingos on wheels.
Yes.
It'd be fun to see like half a dozen or a dozen of those.
Oh, yeah.
Riding around on the play. I would be hysterical.
That would be awesome. I can make this template and put it online for free. It'll be my gift to the interwebs.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm gifting a bunch of stuff at Burning Man this year because I'm a little ADD and I'm a giver. And so...
Well, that's part of the play, isn't it? Is that part of the that you bring?
Yeah. One of the Burning Man principles is the gifting system that they have. It's not barter. It's right. Not trade. It's gifting. And so I'm gifting face painting and I'm gifting glow sticks. I went crazy and I ordered this giant box of glow sticks from China direct. I'm like, $100 worth of a billion glow sticks. I'm making some custom clothes for some friends. Like, I heard a lot about, I've been researching a lot, like a fiend. I think I've been going to the University of Burning Man for the last year. But I see like how the culture has shifted and the burners from kind of like the past generations have a, I guess, a bit of sadness or maybe regret for not passing on the culture better. So there's this wave of like, I don't know, 20-something, 30-somethings that are coming in and they're treating it like Coachella on steroids.
Yeah. Cosplay.
Yeah.
The way they want it, you know?
Yeah, cosplay circus. It's sad because when I look at the 10 principles, it's really a lot of how I would live my life and expect like this to be more of like a, like kind of how people return to the Holy Land every year, you know, to get inspired and then take it back to their personal life.
Like a pilgrimage.
Yeah. And it kind of disheartens me to see some folks like the plug and play camps, you know, and like these people that go out there, they're just like, oh my God, like we're going to go party and then maybe have sex in the desert and get drunk.
I remember Paris Hilton went to a Sundance festival.
Uh-huh.
And Robert Redford's response was, I don't know why she's here. She has nothing to do with anything.
Oh,
which is true.
Yeah.
Part of Sundance Festival is to introduce independent films,
right,
and
yeah,
artists.
And she doesn't have a film.
She has nothing to do with any of that.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what some of the regulars of Burning Man who've been there, going there for years, they can see the same kind of thing starting to infiltrate.
Definitely.
The camp. And it is very sad. When you have a community who have a very specific intent, very basic, altruistic, humanistic intent.
Yeah.
And then you have a sparkle pony coming in. You want to flick them in the head so much that you have carpal tunnel.
Oh, no! I've been very conflicted on this very thing.
But they're young, too.
Yeah. You know,
the part of me thinks, well, I was that age, and you're just playing, and you're enjoying it. And
right.
Pretty soon they'll be this age.
Right.
And there'll be some another sparkle pony that's
right,
interloping on whatever they're trying to get accomplished. And it's just the way the world goes around. And
yeah.
But I think that as long as there are the original hardcore foundation Burning Man people.
Yeah.
That it will always be present. And especially those that bring their children.
Yeah.
The kids are absorbing that and they'll hopefully continue the tradition.
Yeah, I think I've lived rurally and I'm an avid camper, hiker, backpacker, mountain biker. I have a huge respect for nature. One of my big bugaboos with Burning Man is this whole leave no trace thing. It's like, no, you leave one hell of a trace. You really do. You know, you can't say leave no trace because then they start getting these blogs of like, well, we left one speck of glitter behind or we left a human hair behind. You know, it's like, that's a trace, people.
Yes.
I would really prefer that they switch that verbiage to live sustainably and within that principle have very clear instructions on how to do that that are succinctly stated so that the ADD nation that we live in can go, oh, I get it, really quick, instead of, ooh, leave no trace, awesome, well, I'm going to wear my feather boa and my glitter and I'm going to, you know, pour out my gray water when no one's watching and I'm going to go buy a special tent that I call my trash tent, throw all my trash in there and then throw away the whole tent in a dumpster behind Safeway and Gerlach. You know, that's not sustainable. It's not leave no trace. It's very confusing. And I know the forefathers of Burning Man didn't want that.
That was not their vision.
Yeah. And I think I just want to see better guiding of the veterans to the virgins or, you know, whatever they want to call them. I've been calling them the freshman class because when you label somebody a virgin and you say, okay, come to Burning Man and you're going to lose your Burning Man virginity, you're talking about an end of an era and sacrifice. But when you say, hey, you're a freshman and you're going to come to Burning Man as a freshman, that denotes they want you back again already as a sophomore, junior, senior, graduate, you know, and that you're learning every year and that you're building every year. And so I've really been grappling with these concepts. In fact, I'm going to write about it. I have my diary in the September issue of A New Blush. So it's a 2-part series. Like one is talking about what we're talking about right now. And then part two will be when I come back from Burning Man in November.
Before and after.
Yeah, before and after.
Speaking of Indie Blush, obviously the magazine offers a lot more than just photography.
Yes. Yeah, we are a champion for dysphoria, but basically we're giving free advertising to the dysphoria campaign through the nonprofit Capital Indie Collective. So that's another one of the indie brands.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit.
Capital Indie Collective was formed 5 years ago now in response to Mayor Johnson's For Art's Sake initiative. I was mentored by Deborah Edward, who came in from Austin, Texas, and we talked about what a nonprofit for an artistic collective would look like in Sacramento and what we wanted to do. And out of Capital Indie Collective, we've had the Fashion Challenge every year, where we challenge anyone in the region to make couture in 10 days. And we were partners with the Sacramento Film and Music Festival up until this year to offer them at the Crest and give the designers a platform. And we were able to do that with the Crest and the Sacramento Film and Music Festival organizers very inexpensively, because they were very gracious to host us. This year, the Crest had changed management, and they are moving to, I believe, Memorial Auditorium for most of the festival. Just between going to Burning Man and some of the other things that we're doing within the organization, couldn't swing the stage build and things that we would have to do to fill out Memorial Auditorium for a fashion show and competition. So we're going to probably take that out to a casino or another location regionally here to kind of do separately this year. That's just one of the things we do. Another thing is media mentoring. We basically find artists and take them from hobbyist to entrepreneur. They were going to be the first tenant of IndieWood, which is the other big indie brand, which was a live, play, work space for creatives. It was an 800-acre master-planned community with restaurant, retail, sound stages. We can go way down the rabbit hole and talk about IndieWood, but honestly, I stuck a pin in it this year because I was dealing with some foreign finance and just didn't like what China had to offer. And so we just said, you know, we're going to hit the pause button on this. And the recession really kicked us in the teeth. Trying to get $50 million for phase one in Sacramento in a recession is, you're either a total moron or completely optimistic. So I'd like to think I was optimistic. Yeah, we're recalibrating that. And we're trying to get off the ground a smaller version of IndieWood, which is known as Indie House. Spelled the German way, H-A-U-O-S. H-A-U-S. But we'll see if Sacramento can sustain that.
Sacramento's trying to become something.
Yes.
It isn't there yet, but it's trying.
It's been trying for the last 15 years.
Oh, longer than that.
Yeah.
And the irony is, you've got two rivers here.
I know.
And they can't seem to get their act together and take advantage of the location.
Right, yeah.
And the history of the town. They just can't,
I know,
figure it out. You've got Old Sacramento.
Yeah.
It's a gold mine.
Yeah.
Of history.
It really is.
And tourism thrives on history.
Yeah.
I grew up in the area, and I remember back in the day when that was mostly antique stores.
Mm-hmm.
Where it was actually promoting the history and tourism. And now you just have crap stores in there they can find anywhere.
Yeah, it's disappointing. Some of the things about Sacramento, I mean, I've been up to my eyeballs in it for the last 9 years, trying to figure out all the components that would create IndieWood. I worked very closely with the mayor's initiatives and with some of the mayor's staff back when the arena was supposed to go into the rail yards. And my anchor investor pulled out when they shifted the arena to the plaza, to downtown plaza. And that was really hard for me, but I mean, they basically said, no arena in the rail yards, no deal. I was really bitter at the time. I was like, nah! But looking back at it, I mean, the investor was absolutely right. You didn't want to be an island of construction, you know, and then have this big kind of beltway in between you and what's really happening. So that was another reason why we just hit the pause button on IndieWood, because we worked so hard to just get that investor on board. It's funny, like people here in Sacramento, they tell me, just break it down further, Christy, make it smaller and then they'll get it. And I'm just like, how much smaller than a house, you know? I mean, I know Sacramento region gets real estate because they have three industries, agriculture, government, and real estate. So I know at least a third of the populace can understand a house. But the minute you say art collective or independent digital media house, or that they start like freaking out and they're like, well, we're not in Hollywood, you know? And it's like, No, that's
Hollywood's not even Hollywood anymore.
I know. It's like, you mean Canada Wood? You know? So it's just, it's really hard finding people that understand the industry here that they want to invest in. Like, people have said to me, oh, Christy, we'll just get all your constituents together, get all the artists together, and just build it together like a true co-op collective. And it's like, awesome. Well, you show me an artist in the Sacramento region who can drop 50 grand, 100 grand. It's going to cost me about $1 million to create this indie house. And we had a mansion that we were working on that was completely gutted on the inside. And the owner was like totally willing to entertain this crazy idea I had of, I mean, I was going to get a grant from the NEA, a grant from City of Sacramento, a grant from this environmental company to totally green the house, you know. And it was like 2/3 grants, 1/3 investment. And I found the investor and we put the proposal out and I really don't know what happened with that. I mean, basically the owner said he didn't think that we had enough to take the house. And he finally sold it this summer to a single family. And I think what he wanted to see is that house get restored to the mansion it was. Because it was so cut up. It was like a B&B at one time. And it was really messed up.
Different incarnations.
Yeah. And I think he didn't want, because he lives in the neighborhood too. Like, he lives across the street or down the way. And I think he didn't want to live across from a hippie collective. You know? And it's like, that's not what it was going to be, but okay, you know. So, I mean, and my lawyer and some and my investor, like, he was like, I was willing to do that, but we probably end up putting about $1.2 million total into that house, and we would have to sell it for at least $2 or $3 million to get, you know, the investment back.
Yeah.
So, luckily, my investor was very art-friendly and knew that the ROI wasn't monetary, that it was enhancement of lives through art, and he was willing to do that and have a slower return over a longer period of time. But it's hard breaking concepts down to what certain people will invest in. People understand house flipping, but if you put an art collective in it, they go, oh wait, you want me to flip it into an art collective, but how do I get my ROI? It's like the same way, dude. You go in, you improve it, and you flip it to me gradually, you know? And they're just like, eh, I want my money faster, you know?
That is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
The speed of the investment.
Exactly.
Return on it.
Yeah. I mean, people are asking, in this market, it's getting really ridiculous again, because there was this huge land grab in downtown Sacramento about 2 years ago when everything was just rock bottom in the real estate. And I mean, I was going around looking at condemned houses. I was like, can I pick up a Victorian that's been burnt from the inside out and just bulldoze and redo, you know? Because it was, there's this one Victorian, it was 4 stories. And
that would have been cool.
Oh, so amazing. And I've been in that house before because a band used to live there in Boulevard Park. And I envision myself living in the attic and then having the collective for the 2 floors below that, like living, and then the collective, and then the basement would be more living. It was being listed, I think it was $495 for this huge painted lady. I mean, she's beautiful, beautiful Victorian. And before I could finish writing my offer, some guy in the Bay Area had already bought it cash.
My stepbrother has 2 kids, and they've been trying to buy a house. And both times they've lost their bid to a San Francisco investor who had the cash.
Yeah.
So people actually live here, can't buy property here. It's insane.
Yeah. The phase one of Indywood was this huge office park that the state used to occupy. And CHP was located there. And it was a big business park. We were trying to acquire that for, I think it was $2.4 million. And I was just wrapping up financing for that when some guy in the Bay Area swooped in and paid like 3, which is like mine, and just took it. And now they're listing it for like 6. And I'm just like, you're insane. You're going to sit on that property for 10 years. My lawyer called them and was like, hey, look, you know, you kind of swooped in on this collective that was trying to come in. It's art, you know, have a heart, Bay Area resident, you should get it, you know. And they were just like, nope. So, you know, that's like, okay, well, that building shot out of the water for us. Good luck, because no one's going to occupy that building because it's not ADA.
Na, 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 na.
Yeah, karma's a bitch.
Well, speaking of art collective, you definitely are collecting them in your magazine with a diverse representation of the different arts and wine and beer.
Yeah. So yeah, Indie Blush was born out of all this frustration of trying to get the word out about the indie brands and speaking to a lot of independent artisans here in town. They're just like, oh, there's no publications that actually do us justice. And I was like, well, what about Submerge? And what about, you know, Sac News and Review and The Bee? And like when I said The Bee, everybody laughs at me, of course.
It just hurt me. I just laughed. Yeah. A knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah. The Bee loves to hate on artists is what I say. They crucify filmmakers in the front page and then they act like they're hipping with it.
The Sacramento Bee has lost its credibility years ago. How do you go about deciding who and what you're going to cover for any respective issue?
I look for emerging artists. I look for people that are doing it on their own without a publicist, without the engine behind them. No agents or, you know, stuff like that. Every once in a while, of course, I'll cover somebody who's repped. I'm not biased against them. But I look for that person who's really hungry and going after it. And so
the passion is on their heart sleeve.
Yeah, exactly. I run into, because my circles here are so incestuous, I meet artists every single day. Who's like, oh, I'm doing this thing. And it's like, oh, cool. Who are you doing it with? Well, I don't have any money. I don't have any of this, but I do. Like, I have an idea. And I was like, tell me more, you know? And so it's like, I don't know if I'm just like a flame, like attracting the moths or whatever, but
catalyst.
It just seems like people I run into, like in bars or at galleries, you know, I'll just be talking to somebody. And before you know it, I'm covering them because they're just really interesting. Don't have a ton of coverage.
I was walking around the county fair, which of course in Sacramento, which is a downsized version of the state fair. And I saw this guy on the stage, interesting instrument. So when he completed his set, and I said, what are you playing there? I said, it's Appalachian dulcimer. I designed it myself.
Wow.
I said, I would love to have you on my podcast.
Yeah.
He goes, okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just stumble on them.
Yeah. Well, that's what I love about Sacramento in particular, because I've been all over California. I'm an all-over California girl. So, I mean, I've lived in San Diego, Los Angeles, Davis, Sacramento, Tahoe. And one thing I noticed about Sacramento is we're very much like a capital city in that we're very international. The culture here, we're so racially diverse, culturally diverse. You're going to be introduced to so many blending together of ideas on the independent side. You'll see an instrument from one region get fused with a singer from another region, and then they're costumed by another region, and it's just like, what is this? And they're like, well, we call it Asia Fusion Funk, you know? It's like, okay, right on, let's try this, you know? I mean, I think it's the positive side of Sacramento, the artisans here.
Well, that's why I love that you have this magazine, that you're highlighting them, because other issues that you mentioned earlier weren't doing it. They lacked something.
They do.
And I think the fact that you have had personal experience in all these diverse areas, and as you say, you have connections and you have the conversations and experiences, so you know when something or someone is standing out a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm world traveled too. And I don't see, like, there's things happening in Sacramento you're not going to see anywhere else in the world, which is amazing. You know, like, I've been to London kind of going, yawn, I've seen this before, you know, and it's like, oh God, how pretentious. I'm in London yawning, you know. But then there's other parts, like, I mean, I got to see Sir Paul play in Wembley Stadium, and that's like, that was a near religious experience, you know? I mean, you can't duplicate that, which is amazing. There's that kind of amazing here in Sacramento, just people don't know about it. And when you go to a magazine, like, I'll just say it, News and Review, I did an interview with them, and, you know, it's like, here I am, an independent film producer, I'm building an 800-acre plan for the creative class in Sacramento that I'm trying to get finance out of China, the backing of studios, independent studios in Hollywood. And we're just trying to make it like a California, a Northern California thing. We're not Hollywood North. You know, it's just Indiewood. And all they could talk about was the cow print on my shoes and how cute and sexy I was. And I really wanted to just bite my fingers through, you know. And I'm supposed to be one of five, I think it was one of five entrepreneurs to watch was their article. And you're talking about my shoes.
They obviously aren't paying attention.
Yeah. It's just kind of a fluff piece. I think I was the glitter for the men that were in the article.
You know, sadly, that could very well be.
Yeah. Which, you know, fine. I served my purpose for them. But that's another reason why I made Indie Blush. I was like, no more bullshit interviews. Excuse the term. But, you know, it's like, I wanted real stories about what people were doing. And, you know.
Well, that's why I did this. I'm doing this podcast is because there are real stories out there. Different ages, background, faith belief systems, although we don't cover religion and never will, or politics.
Yeah.
There are humans behind every store, like Humans of New York.
Yeah.
The person who started that. Every single person. And if you have an agenda, it's just not going to be interesting, and I'm just not going to give a shit.
Yeah.
And anybody with any IQ that's higher than room temperature is not going to give a shit.
Right.
And even though, of course, they always say, well, you need to write for present 9-year-old mentality.
Oh, my God.
They're completely eliminating this entire sector that actually has money.
Yeah.
That actually would love to invest in your project. Because
right.
they have seen all this other before.
Yeah.
You can only see Gilligan's Island reruns so many times.
Right. Yeah.
Let's look at something different and something unique.
Yeah.
So that's why I contacted you for this interview. Because I like that you're doing something different. I could just feel it.
Yeah.
Do you want to get metaphysical? Energetically, I could feel it was something different.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to talk to you. This is bi-monthly.
Yes.
Do you look, when you're planning, do you have a storyboard insofar as for each year, each quarter, each season? Or are you looking ahead at years and international, because this is also international aspect to it, even though it mm-hmm. focuses on Northern California.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So are you also looking internationally and seeing where it can also be kind of fanned out?
Yes, always. I call myself the unicorn, or a unicorn, not the. I'm one of the unicorn tribe in that, you know, much like your show, it's both sides of the brain, right? I am an artist who can also be a business person. And when I plan anything, there's a 1-3-5-year plan. I try not to pull back the curtain too much, you know, for The Wizard of Oz. But yeah, everything is very calculated and planned that I put out. I also move at the speed of light, because our industry does. So there's a chaotic structure to it. Anybody who has been to my house would know that there's a bit of chaos to my life.
Constant influx.
Yeah, it's constant stimulation. And because it's on the internet, there's so much flashy thingy, it's not even funny. And that's why I have to have the construct. If I don't constantly return and look at, what am I doing this month? What's the date today? What am I supposed to do today and tomorrow? It's all I can focus on right now. Thank God I planned this out a whole year ahead. You know, it's really where I get. And being a filmmaker on top of everything, the summer season is supposed to be my really busy season. This year, I hit the eject button. I have a TV series that I do.
Which is?
Indie Fun TV. That's actually, it's webisodes that this year we ratcheted up to TV. And in the beginning of season, it was just like there was a bunch of stuff just exploding. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to hit the eject button, put this thing on pause, go to Burning Man, you know, do my sabbatical, come back, and then just hit it. Because I can shoot that particular series anytime. It doesn't have to be like a feature-length movie. The best way to really knock one out is to shoot for like 30 to 45 days straight without the rain. And in Sacramento, you could pretty much do that like in June and July, maybe August. It's really hot in August, you know, and then maybe September. But then, you know, you have rainy season. It's very unpredictable here.
Unfortunately, we really haven't had a rainy season.
Right. Unless it's a drought.
Yeah. The rainy season also hit the eject button.
Yeah.
For us poor people in California.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
can you tell me who you're going to be highlighting in the next issue?
September's issue, we're doing a piece on Burning Man, and there's a couple of filmmakers that we're looking at doing articles on. It's I call it our back to school issue. So all of our themes, we have a theme for every magazine, but they're not always as blatantly stated. This one in front of you, our May issue, was our anniversary issue, but it was also Asian Month. It's National Asian American Month in the United States. So we highlighted Asian actresses, Asian promoters for music, the Sacramento Asian Pacific Film Festival. If they were any kind of Asian and they had any kind of awesome art out there, we pretty much dove into that and said, hey, do you want to interview? You know, and a lot of people were really receptive. And we were able to kind of tag team with another festival in Los Angeles, which was the month before. And so it was really kind of great networking. Yeah, as far as like letting out specific names for September, I'm going to let people just
of course,
click on it and see for themselves when it comes out. There's a great photo essay coming I'm very excited about. I find every month it always just kind of comes together when I do it. And it's bi-monthly because I do way too much to do it monthly. I wouldn't be able to keep up if it was monthly.
Now, what do you have in the current issue that's in the international aspect?
In our current issue, our July issue, July-August, we do have Autumn Sky in the issue. She's on the cover. Fantastic musician and band. She actually, even though she's Sacramento-based, I consider her international talent. She is in iTunes and has a very, I wouldn't say like world beater international sound, but she's very soulful and anybody can like her music. I picked her last month because we were just talking about music in general and messaging, and I just rang true with a lot of stuff she was saying. Again, looking for the real story behind the artist, we just started talking about like feminism, the F word. Yeah! And what it means to be a modern day feminist and just women in particular in the United States, like what we're dealing with now that we didn't deal with in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s, how things are different, how we surf the system. It was really, I don't know, I just identified with her on such a base level that I felt I really had to interview her and do a big spread and stuff. So we did a big photo shoot with her and dressed her up in a bunch of boutique clothes. Oscar Benjamin, he's a fantastic writer. He's in one of our contributors. He covers, I would say, Oscar Benjamin's reach is farther than mine. I have to kind of keep my reach in the Sacramento, Northern California region because of how busy I am. But Oscar's primary function is writing about Indiewood, Hollywood, Bollywood, kind of wherever. And he does musicians and film mostly, but he does like the in-depth stuff too. And then Arlene Barshinger, she's one of our contributors as well. She also really gets out and about and has more of a worldly kind of exposure. And Adrielle and Christy is our fashion editor. She has exposure that's global, and she also writes for Trend Privé magazine in, I believe it's Germany. So she brings kind of a lot of that international feel and aspect. I mean, she really does have her finger on the pulse. I'll call her, but like, hey, Adrienne, let's go do this thing. And she'll be like, duh, it's New York Fashion Week. Sorry. You know, I'm like, oh, what's that going on? You know, and I consider myself pretty up on fashion. So it's, she knows where it's Fashion Week. Like if I called her up right now, I said, hey, Adrienne, which Fashion Week is it right now as we speak? And she'll be like, well, Paris is coming up in, you know, September. So, which actually is true. It's coming up in September. We got some great photographers, Kimberly Lucero, Chris Casella, David Alvarez, you know, and they're part of that network that reaches out with me to people here in Northern California and beyond. Honestly, there's a lot of international brands that actually live up here. So that's kind of nice too. Grass Valley, we have a lot of folks who made their way and retired rich from the business. So it's nice.
And I love that they have their Wild and Scenic Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Which they covered earlier this year. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know the Wild Scenic also comes to Sacramento?
I like the area better.
Yeah.
Wild and Scenic is in not really Grass in Valley. Sacramento.
Yeah, right.
So I liked it. Just seemed more apropos when you're actually in the mountains.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're really great. The organizers up there are really nice. We do, in January, we do a film festival guide for all of Northern California. And that's why I threw in the one for Sacramento, too. We had, God, I lost count. I want to say we're up to 30 film festivals a year in Sacramento, the city of Sacramento alone. And then Napa's got 2 going on, 3 festivals. Grass Valley has 2. Tahoe has a couple. San Francisco has like 6 or 7, which I'm surprised. I think they would have a lot more. But I think with San Francisco, they're a lot bigger. So there's fewer of them, but there's a lot more money behind them with bigger presence. Sacramento has a way of, if one is good, why not 5? You know? And I know there's been like this kind of insurgence of, God, there's too many nonprofits in Sacramento, or there's too many film festivals in Sacramento, and there's too many visual artists or graffiti artists in Sacramento. And it's like, no, there's plenty for all. There's.
And I also like that, say, the Crockett Museum has some playing classic films.
Yeah.
with Matthias Bombal, you know, hosting.
Uh-huh.
He's a big fan. I interviewed him one time. We're both old movie fans. And I, when I say old movie listeners, I mean old, 30s and 40s.
Yeah.
Not 80s. Actually old movies. So I love that they've been showing those at the Crocker Art Museum and actually having events surrounding them. So it's not just contemporary and new stuff, but appreciating what came before and recognizing elements that are being copied today.
Like
that movie you just saw, somebody already did that.
Right. And they did it with scissors and celluloid, not digital media effects and plugins. Yeah. I love that stuff. In fact, one of our writers, Cliff Weimer, is a film historian. Like the May issue, the Sisu Hayakawa articles written by him. And I mean, that was the first sex symbol. He happened to be Asian. So like the first one of the major sex symbols in Hollywood was Asian. It's like, that's huge. Because back in the day, it was so racially biased. And then, you know, as things moved forward with World War II and everything, they really emasculated the Asian male in cinema. And so it's sad these days that we're just slowly getting back to that sexy Asian male who's well endowed. You know, I hate that stereotype of like, you know, what they portray Asian males as.
Oh, women are stereotyped. Why not men, too? Equal opportunity stereotyping.
It is refreshing to see where we've been and where we're going. I hope Indie Blush helps to tell that story. I love the follow-up stuff we do when we follow an artist and then, you know, months later we'll have like a little follow-up. Or we're coming up on doing a follow-up on Sasha Lauren, actually. And she's somebody through all of the indie brands has grown quite a bit. I met her through the Fashion Challenge. She grew a dress. She makes her dresses out of kombucha. So she calls it vegan leather. And she won the challenge because she grew a dress in 10 days and decorated it, sewed it, you know, everything. And basically from there, we hooked her up with Sac Fashion Week. That was part of the prize and some media mentoring for her. And this year, she ended up on the red carpet at the Oscars.
Nice.
Her kombucha bow ties were on Celebrities. And she did the gifting event, the Nokia gifting event before the Oscars. And she's going to Paris Fashion Week in September. So November, we want to catch up with her and be like, so, how was Paris? But I love watching where they've come from and where they've gone in just a couple of short years. A lot of people get frustrated with Sacramento because the people that don't know, they're like, oh, there's nothing ever exciting that happens here. And it's just like, well, you know, how about open your eyes?
Well, I think it's difficult because they don't have a central magazine. News and Review has a calendar and they try to put...
Yeah.
Include events that are happening. Sacramento 365 online.
Yeah.
That's given a better...
Great resource.
Much better, yeah, we ever had before. Yeah. Online that covers events. For example, the Black Book Fair. That's the only place I ever saw it.
Wow.
Even after that, it was the second annual. And it was so organized. I was so impressed. I just like to cover book fairs because I like to walk up and down the aisles and just have authors talk about their books.
Yeah.
That's why I went to this. And... It was historic Oak Park. It was Friday through Sunday. It was held at 8 different locations within. So highlighting historic area of Sacramento, which I thought was really cool in and of itself.
Yeah.
But it was so professionally run. And it was classy and sophisticated. And Sacramento itself tried to have their first book fair, and it sucked. It was horrible.
Oh.
They had authors speaking upstairs, but at the base of the stairs, there was no signage.
Oh.
Nothing.
Ah.
So these poor people are up there talking to no one.
Right.
So I attended the Black Book Fair, which was like, this is how it's supposed to be done. I didn't see anything on the news. Yeah. I kept looking for something. There was nothing. It was a second annual, so it wasn't like it was their first attempt at it.
Right.
And so I sent them the podcast show link.
Yeah.
I said, you know, thank you for letting me be part of this. And a few weeks later, they sent out a mass email to participants and contributors, nice. Et cetera, saying here's some photos that... You know, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And here's Julie Parker's podcast to cover the event.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really cool that they did that. And I think that they appreciate the fact that somebody was covering their event.
Right.
And that somebody happened to be a white blonde girl.
That's so true.
You know?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so you're going to laugh at this. I went to the I Love Being Black thing, the Juneteenth. Years ago, I used to go every single year. It's just that things have been really busy for me in June lately. My daughter, you know, just cute little blonde, She's so white. We call her Casper. She's just, she has no melatonin. But we were just, you know, bopping along Juneteenth, and we went by the booth, I Heart Being Black, and we slapped a button on, and we were getting the strangest looks from everybody. And I'd forgotten we'd had these buttons on, you know. And, you know, sometimes you just forget yourself in a crowd. But I quickly realized we're like the only white folks in this large group of people, you know, celebrating this really awesome, well-done, organized event. And it just seemed like there's these, as diverse as we are in Sacramento, there is a segregation of events and arts that I just am flabbergasted at. I mean, you look at different, the different cultures we have here, you'd think that all people from all walks of life would be interested in dipping their toes in everybody else's pool. And I don't know what it is, but it seems like the Asians have their Asian events, African Americans have their art events, and, you know, like Latinos have their events, and, you know, you'll see a smattering. I mean, it's not totally exclusionary, but you'll see a smattering of cross-culture there, but very little.
Yeah, it's not evenly balanced at all. It's crazy, and I feel like Norma Ray, and I'm up on that soapbox. So I'm going to as many events as I can and get them out and bring attention. Hey, you guys need to check this out. And this is really interesting. And so you and I are both doing what we can.
Yeah, exactly.
To get the word out. So
always.
Any struggling artists out there, regardless of whatever the media may be, do you have any suggestions of resources? I mean, can they contact you? Maybe you can refer them to somebody in their part of the world.
Always, always. That's probably a lot of what I do between being executive director of Capital Indie Collective and then the founder of the Indiewood Project and Indie House. Like, I facilitate, connect, enable. That's what I do. And with a lot more money, we could do a lot more.
So do you have a specific email address so they could contact you directly?
They can always contact me through Indie Blush, the info at indieblush.com, and they can contact me through Capital Indie Collective. I'm responsive on social media, not so much this summer because I was on sabbatical, but, you know, they can find me online. I'm on Facebook, I'm ChristinaMarie.filmmaker, and just friend me or follow me there. And if you follow and like the pages for Indie Blush, Capital Indie Collective, I think those are the two main ones. We, as a group, I mean, all the people, the contributors behind the magazine, are always looking for artists. They also have their feelers out all the time. My writers come to me and say, hey, I met this person. They're so cool. Can I interview? And I'm like, yes, please do so. You know, we'll find a place to put them in. And very rarely do I turn somebody down. You can also submit to the magazine if you have a photo essay or a project you're doing. Perhaps you want to write your own article. You are more than welcome to submit it directly to me, info@indieblush.com. And if we think it's print worthy, we will stick it in the magazine. If we have too much content for that bi-month, you know, maybe it'll roll over to the next magazine or we'll put it in the blog. At least it helps to get your word out there.
By the way, Indie Blush magazine is available via print on demand, which is lovely. Do something different. Enjoy a splurge with a root beer float or banana split.